This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
PacVid1.com. That's PacVid1.com. Don't forget the one and join our mailing list at AskTheCandidates@YahooGroups.com. That's AskTheCandidates@YahooGroups.com. Support the independent campaign for a better, unedited WBAI. This is Albert Solomon. You know the rest. All the world is red and bloody everywhere I roam. You trapped your mother's opportunities. I'm longing for the old blood sucking and for the old rules at home.
Just a last little bit from the theme song to the Global Medicine Review right here on WBAI. We are listener-supported and commercial-free community radio in the center of the FM dial in New York City. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide. It's 1 p.m. in New York City. Coming up next, The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, trying to help you lead a more positively minded life.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York Station. I got New York Station. Come aboard, here you are, WBAI, and The Positive Mind. The Positive Mind, which is this, It's a laboratory. And it's a college. It's a place where you learn, and you learn about yourself, and you learn about people, the idea of which is the more you could learn, the more you understand, the more you love, or certainly the less you hate. You know, the more you understand people, the less you get angry at them. It's real easy. I mean, why do you think people who get older become less hateful? Because they become more accepting. Things that used to get your goat back then don't get your goat now. And probably you don't even have goats. So what part of what happens is, you know, you get a little wiser. Now there's a second element of this that has not been examined too well in psychiatry. So today I'd like to take you along a double road here, the R&R. But not the rest and recuperation. I'm talking about remorse and regret. Two very interesting words. Remorse. That's that deep, torturing sense of guilt over a wrong that you've done. Remorse. You know, like who you elected. No, remorse. Remorse. Like something you've done that you don't like doing. Regret is a troubled feeling of, Over your own act or an omission, right? So they're really two different things. You could have regrets or you could have remorse. Now, there are some people that have no remorse, so I guess I may as well start off with defining the remorseless ones. The remorseless ones, I'm going to give this some time, even though I've given it much time in the past, but for you to learn about it is just such a good thing for you. The psychopathic personality, you just must learn to recognize this because it will do you so well in this world. The psychopath is one of the most fascinating and distressing problems of the human experience. In our human family, there is a group of people who are psychopathic. And for the most part, a psychopath never remains attached to anyone or anything for any length of time. But they've passed through your lives. tree of life, usually wreaking havoc. Now, the reason we bring this up is because the psychopath is known because they do not have remorse. They don't feel the deep, torturing sense of guilt over something they did wrong. They have regrets. Sorry I did that. I got caught. You know, so when a prisoner is being brought up for a possible release, they may ask him, you know, do you regret what you've done? And they're looking for remorse, and he says, yeah, of course I regret it. I'm in jail. Do you feel remorse? And what they do is they're taught to learn to practice remorse, to practice feeling remorseful. All right, so let's go. Now, this idea of remorse, a psychopath does not mean that they are definitely emotionally shallow, but love is not one of their shallowness. They have love, they have adoration, they have relationships, usually short-lived, but they are connected. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about that, and then we're going to go on to some of these dynamics of regret that I promise, if you learn about this, going to make your life richer. They need relationships. This is what we're talking about, the psychopath, but they need people as obstacles. You know, they need people, they see people as having obstacles that they have to overcome and be eliminated. So if you meet someone you really like, but they're married, you got to get rid of their husbands or their wives, or you got to get them away. If you meet somebody that you like and there's a challenge, you don't know where to live, you've got to take them and with them develop a place to live. But it's all about the challenges that have to be eliminated. If not, they see people in terms of how they can be used. How can I use this person? So let's say you're very filled with yourself and you're a rock star on stage and somebody comes along and they offer you sex and you say, okay, sex, but that's readily available. How else can I use this person? Oh, this person is the son of the mayor or the daughter of the mayor. That's a different thing. They think in those terms. They use people for stimulation to build their self-esteem, and they invariably value people in terms of their material value. They value people in terms of money, property, what they show, what they've got. Okay, a psychopath can have high verbal intelligence. Usually, they just don't lack emotional intelligence, and there's a big difference there. They can be expert in manipulating others by playing to their emotions. There's a shallow quality to the emotional aspect of their stories, too. I met a couple recently as I was involved in something involving real estate where as soon as I meet them, they were admiring something that I had. And they said, oh, what a nice watch you have. Get me to talk about the watch. But this is the verbal intelligence with the kind of schmooze that comes with salesmen. We get engaged, we get involved in something that obviously has emotional content because it's an old-looking watch, you know. And I'm engaged. They're experts in manipulating others by playing to their emotions. There's a shallow quality to the emotional aspect of their stories, though. When a psychopath tells you a story, you don't usually hear how they felt and why they felt that way. And how the others may have felt and why. So if you're saying I was running across the street and I saw somebody get hit by a car, so I rushed over, and they're telling you a story meant to manipulate you in some way, you're hearing the absence of emotional content. I felt terrible, and I reached over, and I tried, and I felt, and they don't talk in those terms. It's generally more factual. The lack of emotional intelligence is the first good sign that you may be dealing with a psychopath. A history of criminal behavior is another sign. And the main thing when you talk to them about the criminal behavior is usually they claim to be innocent and victims, and that's how they got caught. Now, here's a list of items based on the research of a man named Dr. Robert Hare, H-A-R-E, if you want to look it up, as in rabbit hare. Dr. Hare, which is derived from the Hare psychopathy, which is a very cool word. You know, you talk about the study of the psychopath and you say psychopathy and everybody thinks you're very intelligent. These are the most highly researched and recognized characteristics of psychopathic personality. We're talking about this just for a couple of minutes because I'm going to move on to the more important one and the more interesting one today, regret. Glibness, superficial charm. You see that all the time. Guess who this qualifies people for, you know? You're going to hear me give you a list of people who are candidates for the Senate, you know, and the House of Representatives and all other representatives and all other governmental positions. A glibness, a superficial charm, psychopath definition, need for stimulation, prone to boredom, right? They plan not to stand still at any given moment. They're always on the move. Cunning and manipulative. Shallow emotional response. You know, like kind of dull, like they're asleep almost at times. Parasitic lifestyle, people that they live off, people who live off them. Promiscuous sexual behavior, that goes along with government. Lack of realistic long-term goals. Sometimes, now there are two kinds of psychopath. One psychopath is the one who is aggressive and acting out, and then there's the other one who's in business. The ones who are in business can have long-term goals because they pursue it with a vengeance. Irresponsible. Many short-term relationships. Grandiose sense of self. You know, they feel like they're really important. Pathological lying. Now, pathological lying is an interesting thing. You have to pay attention to it because a pathological liar lies for no reason. Even when they don't have to lie, they lie. It's like they're so used to it because it's always creating an escape. It's always creating an exit. They're thinking that even if I told you the truth, if you said, how much did that jacket cost? And if I told you $12.95, I may not have as good an exit as I said, well, I got it from a friend of mine and he got it from you at his discount. Therefore, you're going to think more about me because I got it at a discount, and therefore you're going to think the jacket is worth more, and you're going to give me more self-esteem. It's an automatic. Just don't tell the truth. A lack of remorse, lack of guilt, we talked about that. Poor behavioral controls, you know, every now and then if they get this impulse, they just act it out. Early behavioral problems when they're kids, they get in trouble. Sometimes their mothers get called from the school. They're impulsive. They fail you to accept responsibility for their own action. They tend to blame people. Juvenile delinquency and criminal versatility. You know, they could be really versatile. So here's the last bit about it. There's a significant amount of evidence to suggest that, number one, there may be a genetic influence that creates a psychopathic personality. We're finding links about that. Adult psychopaths do not benefit from traditional counseling therapy. Therapy doesn't work. And the brain of the psychopath may function and process information differently than non-psychopaths. You see, a psychopath, it's kind of like he's a primitive survivor. He's got a brain, you know, he's got an amphibian brain. It's like, it's kind of, how do I get out of it? How do I take advantage of this? So the brain of a psychopath may function and process information differently. So it's very important for us to realize that when we're trying to talk to them, we're not talking on the same wavelength. Every now and then, there's a couple of films, there's a couple of series on TV. I know there's one called The Unit that I was passing by, which was Band of Psychopaths. You know, that was all about training people to be soldiers in a unit, where they get jobs done regardless of feelings, and they just follow their role. And it's people like this. People like to see people like that. So they think differently than we do. How do you think about, like, James Bond? You know, James Bond is a classic psychopath. How do you think about killing somebody and then going off in the boat with the girl and not thinking twice about the fact that you just shot somebody? How do you do that? What kind of mind goes with that? Okay. The other thing we've learned about psychopaths is that the less intelligent ones end up in prisons because the highly intelligent ones, they run companies and they use resources. So they have lawyers who are psychopaths working for them. Not all lawyers are psychopaths. Some exceptions. But it's, you know, If you don't have any feelings, then you have no limits. There's a series on television about a lawyer who's called Shark, who talks about his limitless sense of lying. He said it's all about how well you lie. Court is about lying. It's about you tell a lie and I tell a lie, and we hope neither one of us get caught and nobody's right. And what we've also learned is that psychopathic behavior has a strong genetic tie to the survival of the species value. And lastly, psychopathic personalities are much more common than you think. We are breeding them. We have them and we feed them because now they are becoming the great Wall Street successes, the great business successes, the best salesmen. I saw another program recently called Flip This House. Somebody told me about this. It was a very interesting program. I looked at it, and the idea of the man is hiring somebody. He was hiring somebody to work for him who would be the best at lying to people. He wants to get someone who has no remorse about lying to people so that the house could be sold, like a real estate agent, you know? So if they've got, you know, cockroaches in the basement, we got to hide it. And if there's a flood and it says rotten mold, we hide everything. And the whole idea is just flip this house. Just sell it. Buy it, paint it, sell it. Yeah. And we teach it. And it's admirable. And we watch it on television and everybody says, ooh, maybe I'll try real estate and psychopathy. Maybe I'll get myself a nice heavy dose. Now let's look at regret. And, you know, I'm going to ask you people to call in with your regrets. Regret seems to be something almost endemic to midlife and beyond. You know, you get to your midlife, they call it the midlife crisis, and the guy suddenly says, oh, I never did this and I never did that. And so he goes out and he buys a Jaguar and he starts to have an affair of some kind. And this is based on regret. Regret is that shoulda, coulda, woulda, you know, chatters away at us from time to time. It's a sense of sorrow based on decisions that you've made in the past. But it's an interesting thing because the way it's a sense of regret is that you take the moment that you're in and you're sad about what could have happened had you made other choices. Maybe you should have dropped out of school and gone to live in Europe. And what you tend to do when you're living with regrets, and some people live more with regrets than others, in fact, depressed people usually have a great deal of regrets. And what are the choices that you would have made? You imagine that those choices would have worked. So let's say if only I had married Tony instead of Barry, then everything would have been cool. Because Tony and I would have had a wonderful relationship because he was a wonderful person and he treated me wonderfully. Now, very likely, Tony is sitting at home and saying, oh, if only I married Barry instead of Mary. You know, because it doesn't necessarily mean that that which you imagined in your regret came true. It would have been the same miserable life if you had a miserable life later. The situation isn't as strong as the mood you were carrying to it. Now, the interesting thing is that midlife begins somewhere around age 30. This is the latest research, not around age 45 as they're thinking. It's at age 30 because when you get to be 30 years old, you suddenly say, oops, I'm over 30. Now, what did I do, what did I not do in my life? The younger people, earlier than 30, talk about what they're going to be. By 30 years old, there's a shift in your interior. You start to look at time differently. You start to look back, and you start to carry these little regrets, and you wonder when you're going to act on them. Also, it's an interesting thing because people start dying. After 30, people you know start dying, and the realization of mortality tends to ripen feelings of regret. Because you say, you know, time is passing and I'm not having a baby, and time is passing and I don't have the happy relationship. And then at one point it seems the only thing to do is I'm trapped. I have children. I can't leave this marriage. Therefore, my regret is that I have trapped myself and I give up. And therefore, depression. We're going to put some steam into this today because I think we found some fascinating things about it. See, people get stuck in a pocket of thinking in which they feel sorry for themselves for never having done something that they may have turned out, you know, that would have never turned out the way they imagined it. But they kept saying, oh, if only I had been a dancer, if only I had had 45 lovers, if only I had done this, instead I did this other thing. Usually work-play conflicts. I worked instead of played, or I played instead of worked. So now, fascinating, they did a lot of research. And here comes the research. There are the people who followed their impulses to live their life to the fullest as they saw it. And there are the people who inhibited their impulses to live their life at the fullest. Now, for this qualification, my friends, this is Armand DeMille, by the way, and we're talking about regrets. It's great. I mean, you're going to get an understanding of this. I hope it doesn't get too complex. So we're talking about what you regret. Now, let's take addictions for a minute and put addictions aside, because, you know, addictions, that's a different thing when it comes to regrets. Let's say you've got a condition called oniomania. You know what oniomania is? You don't know what oniomania is? Oniomania, of course you do. It's shopping. It's over-shopping. Yep. Overbuying, oniomania. Overbuying, splurging on tasty foods, splurging on things, too many shoes, too many bags. Isn't that a nice word? Oniomania? Sounds like onion. Like an onion mania, it's an oniomania. But that's one. I mean, that's kind of benign, right? What about gambling? So here I want you to put this into two categories. Think about this. If you involve yourself in gambling and you gamble too much and lose money, do you have regret or do you have remorse or do you have both? Well, if you lose money, of course you have regret. If there's somebody in your life who you've promised you wouldn't gamble, then you have remorse, hopefully, right? Unless you're a psychopath, then you don't. Then you just take the money out of their purse. Okay, so let's say try another one of the addictions. Let's say alcoholism. Alcoholism, beauty about being alone if you're an alcoholic. Oh, and there's a wonderful movie out there that you should see. Recently released. I've got to remember it, and I'll bring it back to you after the break. Matt Dillon, recent movie. I'll give you the name of it. It's beautiful to watch the progression of the life of an alcoholic. So if you have somebody who is an alcoholic and you go out and you binge drink, do you have regrets? Well, somewhat. Do you have remorse? Only if you have to account to somebody, right? So addictions are very funny. Addictions of all kinds. Think about this. You tell me, what is it? Is it regret or remorse when a person has a food addiction? Now, this is an interesting thing. You have a food addiction, you're on a diet, and you have a food addiction, and so you go eat an ice cream sundae. You certainly feel regret, but do you feel remorse? No, usually not. I feel so guilty I ate an ice cream sundae, unless you promised your mate. And your mate said, I'm so concerned about your well-being. You might have remorse then. Sexual infidelity. Regret. Usually remorse, and usually less regret than remorse. So it's a funny thing. Some things have regret, and some things have remorse. And some things, the biggest regrets we seem to have when it comes to something we did do that we didn't think we should do, are things that are addictions. We fed our addiction. We didn't control it. Well, this is an interesting thing. If that's the source of most of the remorse of your life, you're fed an addiction, you know? Is there anything we could do about this with this knowledge? It's about your addiction. It's about the way you are, even if you're somebody who gets angry all the time. So here's what they had to look at. They had to look at two things. The people who fed their addictions, no, the people who fed their desires, not addictions, the people who followed their impulses, but not necessarily the addictive ones. They didn't become an addict, they didn't become a heroin addict or a drug addict or anything like that, but they did go off and quit accounting school, and they went to join, they did form a rock band and see what that was like and traveled around the world. There's that group, and they never had any money, and 20 years later they're sitting in an apartment with a wife and a child, and they're saying, oh, I should have stuck with accounting school. There's that group. And there's the group who's stuck with accounting school. And they have a nice house, and they have some nice children, and they have a little guitar down in the basement, and they pluck it every now and then, and they are filled with a kind of a depression over the regret that they never followed their heart. So which ones do you think are emotionally more stable at the end of time? At the end, do you think the ones who followed their heart, right, which we call myopic. It's called a myopic behavior. You do it because it's short-sighted, you see? You do it because you just think about the now, and you're following the now, and you're not thinking about your long-range thing. So you can either have a myopic behavior, or you could have a hypernopic, or hyperonic. Hyperonic, which is excessive farsightedness, which is you worry too much and you stop yourself from living. You wanted to learn how to play the guitar, but no, it makes too much noise and you can't afford a guitar because you got to study for your accounting exam. You know? Which one do you think regrets it more? Which one do you think yields the highest rate of depression? The people who were myopic or the people who are hyperopic? The hyperopic now are the ones who inhibited themselves. They had farsightedness, excessive farsightedness, and they just stopped themselves over and over again. And the first group was the one who didn't stop themselves. They jumped in. Well, it will surprise you. It will surprise you to learn that the ones who indulge themselves have significantly less depression than the ones who didn't. The regret of a person who has not followed their dream seems to become a permanent fixture in their minds. Now, of course, there's two different kind of people here, kind of person who would follow their dreams and the kind who wouldn't, and would this kind of person ever get depressed anyway? But they seem, when it relates to myopic self-control, when it relates to whether a person inhibits their short-sightedness and they inhibit their impulses, that they, in the long run, are not as depressed as the people who do, who inhibit their, people who never reach for the stars, who never reach for their dream. Another interesting statistic came out today. People in their 50s and 60s are about as happy as they were in their 20s. Yep, statistically. How happy were you in your 20s? However happy you are in your 20s is what you could expect to be in your 50s and 60s. That it doesn't change very much. The level of happiness doesn't change very much. It's usually not you were undepressed when you were 20, but you're depressed when you're 60. It's somehow the spirit stays the same. Just one of those interesting statistics, and this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be taking your calls in a little bit about your regrets. What did you do on winter break? Did you study? Or did you go to Mexico or wherever you like to go? Did you go to Paris on your winter break when you were a kid? What do you do on your vacations now? I met a man the other day who says my vacation hours are adding up and they're going to take them away from me at the end of the year because I haven't used them. Imagine having withering vacation days. Imagine being a person who watches. It's like watching your award points on your credit card, you know, die because you didn't use them. How does that happen? It means you have to have really inhibited myopic vision. You have to say, I can't all the time. In the long run, indulging leads to less regret. I'm not talking about in addictions. Because in the long run, if you're somebody who suffered from an addiction, indulging could cause you a great deal of problem. But in the long run in general, avoiding your dreams leads to greater regrets than having at least tried it. It is better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all. So we're going to take a short break, my friends, and when we come back, I'm going to play you a little music, of course. One of my favorite blues singers who sings about regrets, Jimmy Rushing with Dave Brubeck. And then we'll come back and take your telephone calls today at 212-209-2900, hearing about your own regrets, about your own past life and how you've dealt with regrets. Right? We'll be right back.
All by myself in the morning, all by myself in the night. I sit alone with a table and a chair, so unhappy there, playing solitaire. All by myself, I get lonely, watching the clock on the shelf. I'd love to rest my head on somebody's shoulder. I hate to grow older all by myself.
Jimmy Rushing. And, so that's one of the things, the great regrets that many people talk about, growing older by yourself. But then there are other people I know who dump the bum. Yep. Got out of the relationship and they're growing older and they're not by themselves because they have close friends and they have us at WBAI and they feel a lot better at themselves, about themselves. So let's see. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We've been talking about regrets and remorse. We addressed the issue of the psychopath, and we talked about regrets compared to things that you've lived out and that you are glad you did and things you didn't do. Now, of course, anybody can get on the air and say, I'm really glad that when I decided to jump out of school and do, everybody could do that. I'd like to take it down a level. You know, let's take it down to where it's real. Talk about the regrets that you have. Talk about the remorse that you have. Isn't it, if you're an addict, as many people are, isn't it painful when you've lived out your addiction at the cost of someone else? when you think of how much you've hurt the trust of somebody who loves you, you know, just by doing one thing or another. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls. This is Armand Mill. Hi, you're on the air. It'll just take us a minute. We'll get somebody up right away.
Okay.
Yes, there it is. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine.
This is my first time calling in, but I've listened to the show for years, and I want to thank you for everything.
And what's your name?
My name is Brenda Maglich.
Brenda, is your radio turned completely
off? It's off.
It's off. How wonderful. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I turned it off, having heard so many times when people haven't turned it off. This is going to sound awful and full of hubris, but I try not to have regrets because I grew up with a mother that was depressed. And so I try not to have any regrets because her whole life was she was depressed.
Yeah.
She was depressed.
And she did she express a lot of regrets?
Every morning she expressed regrets. She cried in the mornings.
And what would she say? What kind of regrets?
I've ruined your lives. I've done everything wrong. Oh. You know,
it's so painful for a kid to hear that.
Oh, yeah.
It's so painful to feel that, number one, for your mom to feel that. It's so painful that she lived her life that way.
Yeah.
It's so painful that her children had to hear this.
It was very painful, and my brother, who's 2.5 years older than I am, is exactly a psychopath.
He's a psychopath?
Yeah.
He has no regrets.
He has no regrets.
He's like you. He has no regrets. It ran in the family.
Just like me.
Now, wait a minute now. Your brother is a psychopath. He has no remorse. He doesn't feel guilty about
right.
anything he did.
Right. He has no remorse, and he's in and out of jail, and he has all the criminal behavior of victims. He's
you know,
a
victim. It's an interesting thing. One of the things they find about regret and remorse is when we were doing a study about people who use cocaine, and we were doing a treatment center here for a while, and one of the things we found about people who are attracted to crack is that the beauty of crack is it removed all sense of responsibility. So and so we took it a little step further, and we examined the people who did crack, did they have families that they felt responsible for, and invariably, as we got underneath it, we found that they did have a feeling of responsibility that was enormous, like many of them had mothers who were grieving like you did, or mothers who were in grief like you did. And then we found out, it was interesting, that crack is a chemical psychopathy. It's what it does. It gives you exactly that freedom. Freedom from remorse. Freedom from worrying about your mother. Now, you did it without flipping over on that side. Your brother did it, and the way he did it was he had to become a psychopath. Does he sell shoes or real estate, or is he a lawyer?
No.
He's in and out of jail. He was the one who got in trouble.
Yeah.
Sorry for him.
Yeah.
Sorry for him. And how do you get away with it? I mean, you must have some regrets. Of course you do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure I do, but I'm repressing them.
Well, no, let me ask you a question. Let's look at some of your regrets. Do you regret the school that you went to when you went to college?
No, but I regret sometimes when I was younger, the other schools I went to because they were so overcrowded and awful.
But do you regret did you make choices then? Did you have the ability to make a choice?
Yes, and I think I was what you were describing earlier in the program, the person in a way who was more myopic and kind of followed my bliss.
Short-sighted, followed your bliss. So you have fewer regrets about that because at least you followed your impulse.
Yeah.
But everybody's got a regret of some kind. You know, you've got regrets, oh, I should have stayed in me. I was in aircraft engineering school at one point.
Right.
I don't know how that happened. I had 1 year in aircraft engineering school. Oh, I should have stayed in aircraft engineering school.
Right. I should have finished my degree. That's my regret.
What degree was it?
It was a degree in theater, and what I had done was I did 2 years in the States and 2 years abroad. So when my 2 years abroad, they didn't count it back in the States. So I never got that degree.
Oh, let me ask you. What's your name?
Brenda.
Brenda, what would it take for you to do it now?
I
part-time?
Yeah, I tried doing it about a year and a half ago. I went back to school. It was exciting, and I was doing really, really well. But then my husband and children, it just wasn't working out with their schedules.
Okay, do you think that there's a time that you could plan so that it works out with the schedule so you could get that degree? Not that you're going to do anything with it, but you're going to feel something when you get it.
Yeah.
So what if you plan some time? Maybe sell your children or something. Sell your husband.
Yeah, I'd need to do that.
Just sell your children and then tell them how to get home easy.
I would have to do something like that. He works a very intense job. I know you're kind of down on lawyers, but he's a very nice lawyer.
A good lawyer, an honest lawyer?
He's an immigration lawyer.
Oh, wow. And an honest immigration lawyer?
Well, yeah, I think.
Don't assume that. I know a couple of immigration lawyers who have raked people over the coals.
Oh.
He's a good man?
Yeah.
Send me his name.
He kept winning the pro bono award. He had to stop winning that.
Yeah. Send me his name. Send him to me. You know, I'm not going to just send him. But it's.
What's your address?
Well, look it up on the internet. Go to thepositivemind.com and you'll find it there. But, you know, send me a little note and say, here's my husband and he's a good and honest man and he does good professional work. Because I collect it and it's a very small collection I have of great ethical professionals.
Yeah.
Okay?
He's one.
Oh, and Brenda, and you are one too. So how do we get you to do this? It needs a plan. It needs a plan. You can do it. You can get there.
Because I don't want that to be my life of regret.
Well,
I don't want to sink down like
you
my
won't
mom.
Regret it that much, but it will feel. It's going to feel like magic.
Yeah.
You see, it's not. I want you to be greedy, not fearful. It's not, don't be afraid of your regret, but be greedy for this feeling that you're going to get because it is such a feeling for you when you get it done that you're gonna bake me a pie. You're going to say, Armand, you know, thanks a lot.
I would love to bake you a pie.
All right, on Pie Day.
Sometimes I just have your voice on in the background just to listen to your voice.
It's a good voice for baking pies. March 14th is Pie Day. And it really is Pi Day. Look it up on the internet, Pi Day. March 14th happens to be also my birthday, so there's your Pi Day.
Okay.
All right, Brenda, thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with WBAI Radio. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Jerry from the Lower East Side. How
hey,
are you?
Hey, Jerry. We're on the Lower East Side.
4th Street between A and B.
I could picture it in my mind. I have walked that street myself.
Oh, hello, neighbor.
A and B, just south of the park, right? Two blocks south of the park.
That's right.
That's right. So, Jerry, how about you and your regrets?
I got right now the major regret I got going into my 40s is leaving my wife. I think me and her breaking up is something I'm going to regret for a while.
Yeah. You left her?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does she know that you regret it?
Yeah, she does. I talk to her from time to time. We actually became good friends after we broke up.
Yeah. What made you leave?
She was just being a pain in the, you know.
But?
I wasn't happy with her. That's all. Let's put it that way.
Okay, you weren't happy with her, but now you two are friends. But does she have somebody else now?
Yeah, she does.
She does have somebody else. Oh, I could understand the sadness of that. Did your mother die also?
No, my mother didn't die, but I'm not very close to her.
Yeah, okay, I could hear the absence of your mom. Where is she?
She's around, I just, we were never close.
How come?
Well, she was, she had her problems with substance abuse, and she was never really available to me.
And is she still not available, still problems with substance abuse?
Well, not so much so now. She's cleaned up her act, but it's just kind of late in the game for me to get close to her. Now.
I understand, Jerry. But here's what I hear. Between the loss of your wife and never having a mother, in a way, you're a motherless child. In a way, you're a guy who is not held.
Yeah.
in a way, you know, you may have loves in between, but your heart is missing somebody to hold you because you never had it. You never had it. And that's a sad thing. That's a sad thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, how do you get over that?
One of the ways you get over it, and I'm telling you this works, is you go to some place like, you go to any place where you can volunteer services. And I'm serious about this. This is not a lighthearted recommendation, but it's one of the things we do. One of the ways you do it, of course, therapy works magic. But if you can't do it through therapy, and I would recommend therapy first, but second to that, volunteer work. And volunteer work, I don't care where you do it. I do care where you do it. Do it in a place that's joyful. Don't do it in a place that's miserable. And one of the places I could think of, for example, is the Rusk Institute on 34th Street and 1st Avenue, where they have, I think they're still there, they do, it's the Institute for the Rehabilitation for people who are challenged, and they just ask you to help people out a little bit. The more you extend yourself to helping people out on that level, the more you develop the nurturing part of you, and the more you develop that nurturing part of you, the more it turns around and it gets you to love yourself more. So I'm giving you a complicated thing, but it works. It works, hey. Absolutely. So find a place you could put your heart. Find a place where you could volunteer. If it's going to be children, let it be children. If it's going to be people, not where you're expecting something back. But find a place where you could put your time in and give to people.
Oh, great, great. Thanks for the advice. I'm going to follow up on it.
Okay, Jerry, and keep me posted, would you?
Will do. Great Thanks. Show. Always good listening to you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Ciao.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, is this Armand?
Yes.
I can't believe I got through. Hi, my name is Tom. I've only started listening to your show about a week ago.
Wow.
And I work for a phone company, and I just was, you know, on my breaks. I listened to the radio, and I just happened to stumble upon it. And I'm not a brainiac, but I do have some smarts, and I think the show's fantastic.
Well, you know, there's something, Tom, in just being able to appreciate not just this program, but, you know, because, you know, I don't want to say the program is great because I'm great, but it's kind of magic because it's real information, you know, and you're getting real information and you're learning. But the fact that you have a mind that would go in this direction shows that you have what's called emotional intelligence. You see, well, that's showing that you have it. You have the wherewithal. We have people who listen all over the world. We have people in Afghanistan who are diehard fans because they want to hear people like me and people like you, Tom, talking.
Well, my ex-wife, or soon-to-be ex-wife, wouldn't agree with you on that. But my regret, I guess, is, first of all, I'm alcoholic. And my other addiction is a sexual addiction. Mm-hmm. And they both things allowed me to be within myself, to be by myself.
Sure.
I grew up in a large family. I'm one of 11.
Oh, my
and,
gosh.
And, yeah.
That's
and,
that's tough.
Yeah.
Which one of 11 are you?
I'm the number 8 down.
You're the number 8 down. See, you were really lost in the family. Was there a big gap between you and the other kids, or were you?
We're all basically a few years apart.
Wow. So you're really right caught there, and it's very hard for you to get anything on your own. So you must have been outraged as a kid.
No, I mean, it was tough. You know, it was a lot of love. The family's still pretty tight. But the thing about my family was we were a big partying-type family. A lot of alcohol, a lot of baptisms, a lot of weddings. I'm Catholic. There's always a lot of parties in my house.
A lot of parties and a lot of wine.
A lot of wine, a lot of whiskey, definitely a lot of beer.
Uh-huh.
My parents were very loving parents, but, you know, like I said, there was times when my father would come home and he was looking different because he probably had a couple before he got off of work, you know, and it did get him angry. I guess he was frustrated and stuff. It must have been hard to raise 11 kids, 9 boys and 2 girls. But the reason why I'm calling is because regrets, we all have them. I have regrets. But the thing is, now I'm 40 years old, and I had a career change. I used to be a police officer for the city, and I got let go because of my addictions. But I was lucky. I was lucky because I didn't get fired. I was lucky because I got a pension still out of it. And I guess I've been lucky because no matter how far bad my addictions were, it was a part of me that didn't allow it to destroy my life, so to speak. I was able to overcome everything, and I have a job at the phone company now, and I love it. But the only regret is now I'm 40, and I wish I had this job when I was 20.
Uh-huh.
But...
yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
What did you get from the police job?
What do you mean?
What did you learn from it? What did it do for your character? What did it do for your personality? I'm going to tell you what it did. It compensated for something you were missing as a kid. What were you missing as a kid that you got being a cop?
Well, I guess the number one was the authority, the power, the ability the thing I really got from it was it was an eye-opener. Even though I grew up in Queens, I've seen a lot of sides of life that I would have never seen had I been just a businessman or something.
Right.
And a lot of it was negative. I got to say most of it was negative. And I saw a lot of bad things. And I was down there at 9/11, and that was a bad day, very bad. And I don't have to tell you that, and everybody listening knows how bad that day was. And I finally had enough. And I was enabled through my job, my alcoholism, because everybody knows cops and alcohol go together like cops and donuts. You know, alcohol was just another way we dealt with it, you know. And
sure.
It cost me my friends, and it cost a lot of my dealings with my family, because I isolated. I'm an isolator. And I guess it's because probably I grew up in a large family. But I, you know what it is, at 40 years old, and I could sit here and say, I wish I did this, I wish I did that, but it really, you can't. I can't anymore. I'm living my life now. I'm happy.
You got the idea. And here's what I'll tell you, is you built a stepping stone. You see, you went from a kid who was lost in a family, and even though there was a lot of love around, there's a lot of pickling around.
Oh,
and
yes.
Because there was so much pickling, not many people felt many things on a normal level. Everything
yes.
was kind of squelched or adjusted or changed chemically.
Yes.
So you went from that, and you followed through, and you became just like your family, and you went into a field where you became a man, you grew up, you felt like you became somebody who was an authority, but you were still following that tradition of let's not feel. And then you busted yourself out. Then by getting caught, by having yourself lose and get fired on the job, because of your alcoholism, the change was being created for you. And I could hear that you went into a couple of programs and you've done a bunch of work, and now you're standing at a place where you're more happy with yourself.
I believe I am. I mean,
yeah,
I could be back with my kids and stuff. But you know what? I'm a better man. I believe I'm becoming a better father. I'm not there yet. But I've learned my mistakes. I've learned. I guess that's the key, too.
But, and I think one of the things that we hear from the other people is don't tell your kids what you regret.
Oh, never, never.
You know, don't tell them. It's okay. It's okay to say one or two, but don't keep telling them over and over again how much you regret. Just give them the most love you could give them in the present.
Yeah, I live for the day. That woman said, you said about myopics, they live for the day, that's it. Because I'm not guaranteed tomorrow. I'm not even guaranteed this afternoon. I don't know, you know, going home from work, God forbid, I may get into an accident. AA has taught me a lot. AA has taught me a lot about life.
That's right. It's a great
how to look
teacher.
At things and have to have a higher power. I always believed in God.
I think AA provides you a family that is not pickled. It's
yes.
a family where people are not, you know, hidden behind the repression of the alcohol and the drugs and all the other stuff.
Right.
So I think you've substituted family, and I think you've grown a great deal. It's an amazing thing, Tom.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad to have you as one of the listeners here on WBAI. I'm proud of you.
Oh, man, thank you very much. And I'd like to call again sometime. And God bless you.
Anytime you want. You know, and Tom, you could go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and you could listen to past programs.
Some of them
deal with all your issues, you know.
I hope I haven't caught you. I don't know how long you've been on the air, but I wish I found
17
you.
17 years.
Gosh, gone.
17 years of doing this.
Wow.
And you could hear it all. You didn't lose a thing.
You guys are great.
Thanks for calling
in. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Wow, you really are. You helped
Thank
me.
Thank you, Tom.
Take care, Armand.
Bye-bye. Love those people. Love those folks out there, all you folks out there. I will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. I wish I had more time to take more calls, but I'll try to take some more calls tomorrow. So tomorrow at 1 p.m. I will be back with you. This is Armand DeMille. You can listen to or send a copy of today's program. You know, it's a beautiful thing they do, this Tom Gerby guys. You like a program? You could just email it to somebody. No cost. Doesn't cost anybody anything. And you just send it on, and somebody else will listen to it. Send it around the world. I've actually one time received a program of my own. So I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You go to thepositivemind.com, and you can learn more about WBAI and some of its fabulous things at WBAI.org. Make sure you get in there as well. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Here's a tiny bit more of Jimmy Rushing.
There's a change in the weather, change in the sea. From now on there'll be a change in me. Walk will be different, my talk and my name. Nothing about me's gonna be the same. Change my long tone for a little short.